This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. We are live, and this is Wells Tech, episode 412 for Tuesday, September 29th, 2015. It's 4 o'clock Tuesday afternoon, and I'm Martin Spriggs, and you're watching or listening to Wells Tech, a show about technology and ministry and where those two intersect. We gather together each week to have that conversation, and I usually have that with my podcasting buddy, Sally Draper. Hi, Sally.
Hi, Martin. I'm here to join you again today. Going on 8 full years of podcasting every week. And one of the highlights for me is when the school year rolls around and we get to invite back our semi-regular classroom technology correspondents. And that's what this show is all about. We have Gail Potratz joining us for probably the 8th season. I'm not quite sure if you've done it every year, Gail, but I believe it's been a lot of years, and she is up there in Emmanuel in New London, Wisconsin. Welcome back, Gail.
Thanks, Sally. It's good to be back. It has been a long time. You know, when you say 412, that's a lot of podcasts.
It's a lot of anything. but we enjoy doing it, and I'll second what Sally said. I think it kind of feels right to do the Gail show or the Jason show, where that once a month where we talk about education and technology, especially classroom technology. There's so much to talk about. It's a quickly changing landscape, and it's really nice to be able to get people like Gail and Jason on to talk about frontline kind of stuff, talk about the new things that are out there, the things that people want to figure out and maybe implement in their classrooms. And that's kind of what we're talking about today, a fairly new technology from Google. It came out
last year,
maybe the year before, a couple years old now.
Just one year.
Google Classroom. Google had kind of played around with kind of cobbling together some of their tools to put together kind of a learning management system in LMS, and they finally gave it a name. They put some polish on it, and they rolled it out and offered training. And Gail, you have implemented Google Classroom for the first time this year, right?
Yes, we have. Last year, it was kind of just in beta yet at the beginning of the school year last year, so I wasn't interested because at that time you couldn't use two of my favorite tools, Octopus and Goobrick, if you used Classroom to distribute assignments. So I had a good workflow going, so I wasn't really interested in changing it at that point. But as of this year, we have made a move to do that for the sake of ease of delivery of assignments and handing in of assignments, the ease of that for students and for teachers who maybe aren't as comfortable with technology as some of us are. So trying to make it a little easier so that people all get on board.
Yeah, for sure. We should probably make sure everybody's on board or understands what we're talking about when we say a learning management system versus maybe something that maybe more people are familiar with, a student information system like PowerSchool or those things that track attendance, hot lunch, sometimes grades, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Learning management system really deals more with the stuff that goes on between the teacher and the student as far as assignments, grading, comments, that loop that goes back and forth basically with the student and the teacher, where that learning can kind of be organized and systematized.
Right. It's really most of all, it just expedites the delivery of files for the student from the teacher to the student. Then the student does the work, and then the student sends the file back to the teacher, and the teacher assesses the file and sends it back again. So its development was really to ease that delivery angle, previously, if you used Google Classroom or Google, straight up Google, I'll call it, regular old Google, you probably used a shared folder. And if you used a shared folder to share things with your students, that meant if you put an assignment in there for everybody to see, or if kids handed things into a shared folder, everybody in the shared folder could see. So the teacher could see all the kids' stuff, but the kids could also see each other's stuff in that sense. So what most people did to remedy that, there was a lot of ways to remedy that, but the easiest way was to have kids make a copy. If you sent it out in a folder, in a shared folder, they could go in there and they could make a copy of that and then put that into their own drive. So it got a little bit confusing and cumbersome for people to handle. So Google decided they would make it easier to do those kind of things by installing Google Classroom. It's more private than a shared folder, and it's easier than having kids go three places and make a copy before they could do the work.
So let's, before we jump into maybe a little demo and some of your experiences, what kind of grade would you give Google Classroom so far?
I'm happier with it each day that I use it.
All right.
It can do a lot of things. It also has a learning curve, like all things. And the kids, I do 7th and 8th grade mostly, but I do teach the technology to the other kids too. But 7th and 8th graders, I felt, were doing okay with how we were doing things and how we had things working. They had it down. But they really like it. They've told me that they like this. So when I heard that, I said, well, that's, okay, we're going to keep going. I just started a couple days, at the very beginning of the year, so I didn't work on it too much beforehand. So I will say that you're able to get it up and running in a pretty short time, which is a good thing. So, I'm quite happy with it.
So as you were describing your 7th and 8th graders, I think you were comparing using Google Drive to using Google Classroom, and it sounds like they preferred Classroom over the interaction with Drive, kind of the more manual process.
Yeah, I think they do. Now that we're in it, they do appreciate it. At the beginning of the year, they were just ready to go back and do it the other way because straight up Drive, they could do that.
They were comfortable.
But yeah,
they do
appreciate the fact that it's easier. So.
And then from the teacher's perspective, I mean, we know you're a tech diva kind of person, but probably you have teachers on your staff that aren't quite as comfortable as you, and I would guess maybe that's another sweet spot for Classroom versus just kind of the manual Drive process.
Well, I know that both the 5th grade and 6th grade teacher both have done an assignment, delivered assignment successfully through it and had kids work on it. And just this morning I showed them the other part about assessing and sending back. So, yeah, I think it's going to work out good in that respect. People that aren't necessarily comfortable with technology, like you and I are, find it doable.
Very much
great.
Easier.
So take us quickly through some of the basics of the concept.
Okay.
So those of you that aren't maybe familiar with an LMS, walk us through a couple of the basic things you can do with it, Gail.
I'm going to share my screen with you and show you those kind of things. Okay. For example, the first time that you go in to classroom.google.com, it'll ask you if you're a teacher or student. So you select your role. You select teacher. And then you get to this, the stream, they call it. Okay, so this is my stream. You can see that there are some classes in here. And up here in the little sandwich, as we call it, is where you can get to the inside. If you want to go back and forth between them, you can use this menu over here, or if you want to just go in. For example, I just made a sample class. You make a class by just, this is easy as clicking on this little plus sign, and then you get a class and you name it. I named this sample class. And once I created the class, okay, now that you have a class, you can go up here and select a theme so it looks cool up here on the top. You can upload your photo. And now you need to add some students, okay?
So would you do a class per class period? So eighth grade language arts, for instance, or would you do eighth grade?
Well, you can see if you have all the classes, I'd make a class for every class, and then like we're departmentalized, so you can see I have only the classes I teach, whether they're fifth grade or eighth grade or whatever, I have them in my stream.
So whatever group you're assigning homework and receiving work back from, that's kind of the unit that you're talking about?
Right. If you're truly departmentalized and you teach four math sections, I would make a separate class for each math section.
Four classes, There is
a setup in here where you can just say math class and you can make four sections.
Okay.
It's possible to do that too.
Especially if it's the same material.
Right. I don't think too many of us, at least in the grade school level, are teaching too many classes of the same exact thing, you know. In high school,
maybe more at the high school level.
Mm-hmm. Right. So here you are, you've got your stream, and this is the stream because this is where everything flows through, okay? And now you've got to add some students. So there's several ways you can add students. If you don't have any, they give you this code, and you can have students come in and put in this code to join. But that's a lot more trouble than it's worth to me. I would just disable that and get rid of it, get it out of the way here. Because it's just really easy to invite them if you've already got Google. And by the way, you do have to have Google Apps for Education in order to use Google Classroom. So if you have Google Apps for Education, everybody has a Gmail account. So what you can do is invite them very simply. I don't have my students necessarily in my contacts, but I do have them in groups. So in your admin console, when you put your users into organizations and then when you make groups, these are what shows up here is just my groups from the admin console. So I can go here and open any one of those, and then I can select, you know, if I only want certain ones, or I can select them all. I usually select them all and then get rid of the teachers that are in there, because they're in there just because they're in the email group, because they have them for some classes also. But then just X them out down here, and then you can invite the students, and then they get an email. And when they get the email, they click on the link. It takes them right to this class, and they say, let me go back to, they get to a window that looks pretty much like this, and they see all the classes that are available. They wouldn't see maybe the same exact ones as I do, of course, but they find their class, and there will be a little option here to join, and they just click on join, and they're in. So it's very easy to enroll your students. So then if you want to, the next thing after you have your students enrolled, obviously the thing you do with this every day is make assignments. So I'm going to show you how to do that, just to show you how quick and easy it is. If you wanted to make an assignment, here I am in my world geography class, and if I wanted to make an assignment here, before I show you that, this is up here under students. If you click on students, this is the discussion board feature, I'll say. Get rid of that. Okay, so students can post and comment, or you can just have it so that only the teacher can post and comment. You can have this, you know, whichever way you want. Seeing as I do, once in a while I'll put like a video up here or a question from the story we just read, and I have the kids comment on something, and then the assignment is comment on it and then comment on at least one other student's post. So they have a discussion, you know, kind of an online discussion on something right here in the stream. So I think that's kind of a cool feature. And then going back to
that's kind of Facebook-like, isn't it? Where
yeah, right. They kind of like, it is kind of a social media kind of hook, I guess.
Can you assess then on their interaction then?
Yes, if you make it an assignment, yes. Okay. And I do have one of those. I can show you when we look around later on. But here is the little plus button down here, all you do is click on it. You can create an assignment, an announcement. You can create a question for people to respond to. Most often you go to this one and you create an assignment. So I actually have an assignment that I have.
This is real world, huh? We're going to have to make these kids work for this podcast. Wow.
Yes, it is. These are, it's called the Themes Project. And I've got that created. I could write some directions here if I wanted to. I am going to turn off the due date because this is one of those assignments where they're due this week for some kids, next week for some kids, the next week for some kids. So I am just going to say that, I am just going to say, up at the top, turn off the date and save it so that people aren't all asking me, is that really due then? Because no, it's not. So there's that. And then to bring something in, you have a lot of options over here. You can attach something from your computer. You can go to your drive. You can get a video from YouTube. You can attach a link to something, a website or something. So what I am going to do here is go to my drive, and I know that in my drive I have this already ahead of time. I created this assignment. So in World Geography down here, in the Themes Project, I have my doc that explains, it's just really an explanation of the project, what this one happens to be. So I would add that to my assignment. Students can view the file, edit the file, or make a copy for each. Now in this case, they're just going to view the file because they don't need a copy of this. They can just come here, open it, and see it. So they don't necessarily need to have a copy of this in their drive. You could give them one if you want to, but I don't in this situation. Then I'm going to go back again, and in my drive, I always like them to, of course, see the rubric that you're going to assess them on. So I'll go back into that folder. And, oh yeah, I don't have that done yet. So if I did have it done, that's what I would have added down below. I was working on this afternoon and I was so rudely interrupted. So you can put several things here. There will just be another row down below here. And the rubric, I might give them each a copy of that because sometimes they have it, sometimes they even print it off and we kind of self-assess, and then I compare. So up to you whether you want to or not. But if it's an actual real assignment that they're going to turn in something to you to be assessed, then you always would say right here, make a copy for each student. So here, this is really the crux of the whole thing, is that through Google Classroom, you can create these things, and then you can make a copy for them that goes right out from here. There's no more mess with, I used to have a protocol for file naming. So it doesn't matter how they name the file because you've already named it. You just send it out to them and it's done. So that's really the beauty of it right there.
So and that's Gail, if I remember correctly, it shares it with them with edit privileges, and then once they turn it in, they can still view it, but they don't have edit privileges or whatever. So it does all that nuances of sharing, on a student-by-student basis that you don't have to manage.
Once I hit the assign button, right now, I'm the owner of this, and I'm assigning it, okay? And then as I assign it, and I can go ahead and actually do that. So that's been assigned to them now. So here it is in my stream. Nobody's done it yet because I just got it ready. If I want to edit this, which I will later when I add my rubric, this little snowman up here gives me the option to edit or delete this assignment. Okay, I can put another comment down here if I want to, but yes. And so if someone went in here now, when I go in here, let's say it was all due tomorrow, and so it's tomorrow and it's all been handed in. I go to the assignment and I would see, you can see all the kids I send it out to are all right here, and you can see that they're all not done, okay? And as kids get them done, over, it'll say that they are done. When they're done, up here on the top right, there's a turn-in button. So when they're working on this, and they're all done, and they don't want to make any more changes, they hit the turn-in button, and then that sends it back to me, because they actually, it's like they become the owner of it while they're working on it, and then they send it into me, and I become the owner of it again when I'm correcting it. So I'm correcting it now, and so then when the if these were done, I would open up from here, and I can can't see because my underneath here, underneath my Google Hangout message, I can add comments down here. So this is where I usually comment on the kids' stuff, down below there. However, if you open their actual assignment, I can't now because they didn't do it yet, but if this was a Google Docs document, you could get in here and you could comment in the comments along the right-hand column, just like you would if you did it straight out of a Google Drive. So you still have that option of commenting, you know, all the way down that right-hand column and saving the comments. Then when you're done doing all your commenting, and you can put the grade in right here too if you want to. Now here's the thing, you know, you don't like to do double grade entry. So I think this was never meant really by Google to be, like Martin started off with, it's not really that strong of even a learning management system. It's really more of a just mostly a delivery system. And so most people have a grading, you know, like a final, a PowerSchool or, some kind of grading system. So we typically don't grade in here, but I do still comment here in their stuff, and I grade them in PowerSchool. But I don't know, we just had a discussion about that. The kids, now that we're using this all the time, it is nice for them to see that grade in there. So we haven't really determined as a policy yet how we're going to do that.
So Gail, where does the document, the assignment live? Does it still live within the drive of the student and you just have a
yep.
view of it,
yep.
or does it actually move
yep.
into some other location?
Nope, it's still in there because I'll show you. Now here when I click these all later on and they're all done, I click them and I have to hit return. After I grade them, I have to hit return. Then it goes to them and they become the owner once again. I'm done with it now. They become the owner, which
okay.
I really like because in the old way, you know, I would have tons of stuff sitting in my drive and then I'd have to go through and make them the owner of their stuff again. And I don't like to throw away their stuff because we do the electronic portfolios
mm-hmm.
with Google Sites. So you can't really throw it away because some of that stuff is linked to their portfolio. So it has to go back to them, and I don't have to have this mounds of stuff, and you can still see it on their portfolio from year to year. So I will show you that you can that it's really just sitting on Drive. And the easiest way to see that would be...
Well, while you're looking for that, Gail, I think as you created that classroom, it creates a folder for you automatically
yeah.
in your drive.
Right. There's a folder. As soon as you create the assignment, the first assignment you create, you'll get a folder called Classroom in your drive. Don't rename that folder like I did.
Mm-hmm.
I called it Classroom/Google. And then when I tried to use Doctopus and Rubrik, yesterday, that was what was keeping me from getting it to work. So you have to let it be named what Google wants you to let it be named. So don't rename that folder. Just let it say Classroom. And what you can see here is in the classrooms, there's always a little folder down at the bottom. If you click on that little folder, it just takes you right to the place in your drive where all this stuff is. So if you wanted to quickly get to the list of all their stuff, say, stuff they've done, well, maybe not so quickly. Eventually, see, what showed up is I was in the reading assignment. So these are all the ones I've deleted some of them, but the ones I want to keep, I've just kept in here. I can reuse these again next year then. But this is just nothing more than a folder in my Google Drive. So Classroom communicates with your regular drive is what it amounts to. And for the kids, it's the same thing.
If you go up a level there with the breadcrumbing to classroom, you'll see those same classes that you have. So it automatically sets all that up for you when you create your class.
So it's kind of a nice interface on top of, you know, existing technologies, make it a little bit more easy with some good notifications and permissioning, you know, put in there.
That's a good way to say it.
Gail, you mentioned several times Doctopus and Rubrik. I know that's not what this discussion is specifically about, but those allow you to do more commenting and use rubrics for grading and things like that. And and those are add-ons to Drive that now play friendly with Classroom.
And now you can use them. And let me just show you if I may do that. Let me think, where did I do this? I have an assignment called Sample Something Else. Here we go.
Sample Story.
Sample Story. Now we're in language arts. I just did this so I could show you this. I sent out a sample story, kids to write whatever, and I actually went into her account. She's the first one on the list, so I always play in her account. She always says, oh, you were in my account again playing around. She lets me do that. So I go in there and see she's done here, okay? So now when I open up her, I've already gone through the whole big project, whole process with Doctopus and Rubrik. And so now I'm in here correcting. So I've done the upfront work. So now I can go up, here's my Rubrik extension. So when I click
in Chrome, I'm assuming.
Yes, you have to be in Chrome, that's right. So when I click on that extension, I will see, eventually, I will see the rubric that I created. And my rubric and my grade sheet, which used to be called the roster in Doctopus, is all residing just in my regular Google Drive, where I always used to do it. So here's my good, bad, and ugly, just very quick and easy. So here I would evaluate her up here and put her scores in here. And then the beautiful thing about this, I just did this the other day with 21 stories, it's really nice to be able to turn this on and just comment for the kids on their overall view of their story and what major thing brought their grade down or what major thing was their strength or whatever. And then you can, I'm going to delete that because it'll take long through here to get it to where it's going to go. But what happens is when I submit this, all of these things, it can go to their email. You see here I have sent it to their email. I really wouldn't have to do that. But here it attaches the rubric to their, just like in the old days, but now we're doing it through Google Classroom. It attaches the rubric here. I could have written comments in the box up here. And then underneath here, I would have had a link because I would have clicked Save to Drive, and those comments actually go to the Drive, but they show up here as a link. So the kids
either
click on the
text,
link here.
Text comments or audio comments.
The audio. The text comments will be written out here.
Right, right.
And then the audio comments are a link, so then they can just play it for themselves. Right,
very nice.
Here. It is
That's
very
nice. That's Rubrik, right?
That's Rubrik, but you have to use Doctopus in order to use Rubrik. They kind of go together. So, and that starts out all in your regular folder in Drive, and you just in case anybody really wants to know this, because thank you to the Wells Tech podcast, because learning that has been on the back burner for me for this whole month, and I just forced myself to get it off the back burner and learn it so that I could be ready for today to talk about it.
And it works seamlessly with Classroom. There's no
Now it works, and it works perfectly. So my little
I was just going to say, we gave Gail homework and her students homework, all for
That's great.
We're good at doing that.
Purpose of wealth.
As long as we don't have homework.
But, so, you know, Gail, that's, I know that, that's what I need sometimes, you know, to get going, because I have a lot of things on the back burner. So sometimes I need somebody to make me force it to get to the front burner.
I know.
But this is all you have to do is put it in a folder in your drive, and then if you have, you used to call it a roster. I just want to show you the one thing that shows up differently, because I was hung up on this. So if it's easy enough to show you, I'm going to show you. This is where you used to have to, you know, make your roster in Doctopus for everything that you did. Now you still make a spreadsheet, and you still go up to the add-ons, but if it ever shows up here, when you add on and you go to Doctopus, you know how it asks for the roster? It's coming. There's some different wording, and you'll, this is what was not showing up for me, because you do have to make these rubrics as they tell you. And I like to space mine so it looks nicer, but they don't like that. So I had to get rid of the spaces between the categories. So if I go up to add-ons now and I go to Doctopus and I go to open.
And just while we're waiting on it, Gail, I'll just mention that we'll have links in the show notes. You found some great resources to walk people through Rubrik and Doctopus, as well as a really great video on Classroom 101 that kind of demonstrates some of the things that you described about setting up a new classroom and stuff.
This is so. Adding Rubrik. I'm sorry. It's gone too far to show you what I wanted to show you. I wanted to show you when you go to the word is ingest. When you go to pick a roster here, you usually picked a roster of your kids, a spreadsheet that was a roster. Instead of picking, always having a roster, there's a word ingest something, and you click on that, and that actually pulls all the kids from the Google Classroom. They're already in Google Classroom, so it just pulls them from there and puts them on the spreadsheet.
Very nice.
That's pretty cool. Ingest is the word you're looking for. I couldn't find that because I didn't have my rubric formatted correctly.
Not super intuitive, ingest. That's not your normal.
No, I don't know where that word came from, but
none of them see it. So. Very good.
So that's kind of the nuts and bolts of it, and I hope you can see, you know, the beauty of it. There's, I think, some real positive things. I would not have done it if they wouldn't have allowed me to use these other add-ons, though, because otherwise there's no way to do a rubric in there, and I kind of live and breathe by them.
So if somebody said, hey, I want to try this out, is it as easy as going to that website and saying, hey, load this in, or does your Google Apps administrator need to do that for you? How does that work?
You can, as a teacher, just go there yourself and just go to that
Classroom.google.com
and say there's a role. Are you a student or a teacher? You're a teacher. And you're already logged into your Google account, you know, and working in Chrome while you're doing this. So when you do that, it knows who you are. You're already in there. It connects, and you'll get that blank stream, and you can start making your classes and start adding your kids and start handing out assignments.
Cool.
Awesome.
Yeah. Nice. And there's no charge for it, and just your time and investment in it. So I'm assuming that some of those links we're going to provide are good learning resources. So I'll walk you step by step through some of the things you talked about. So cool.
Right.
Like it.
Right. I do too like it.
Thank you, Gail.
Yes.
Let's move on, Sally. Our next segment of the show is our news in tech.
Yep, and it's my turn to share my screen. I had some fun news come through, actually, through my Facebook stream, and that's where I'm going to share it from. But it's in relation to an event that was held in Milwaukee this weekend. They called it the Maker Faire Milwaukee, sponsored by General Electric, and many other sponsors were in on it. And it was down at the Wisconsin State Fair Park. Saturday afternoon, they had this design and build challenge. And the news in tech for the week is that this group of young men that you can see in this photo from my Facebook page, who represented Shoreland Lutheran High School, walked away with the prize. They were the winners of the GE Design and Build Challenge at Maker Faire this past weekend. And they each won a really cool trophy. a Maker Faire trophy and $100 to each one of them. And there's just a little write-up on the Shoreland Facebook page. I'm sure it's probably in other places, but I did a quick search, and this is where I found it. It says the Design and Build Challenge found only Shoreland having a high school team. The rest of the teams were comprised of college students or adults having professional engineering jobs. The challenge was to build a device to transport a brain through an obstacle course. The brain had sensors to measure the bouncing, so the vehicle had to get through the course with the brain receiving as little damage as possible. And so they gave them a makerspace, and they gave them access to a lot of junk, basically, that they could use to build their transport device. And here the boys are working on that and kind of consulting. I think they had one or two teachers from Shoreland along with them. And there's a picture of the brain that they had to transport in their vehicle. And again, another picture of them making the device, and then a little look at the obstacle course, which is kind of daunting. It's got some ramps and bumps and stairs and all kinds of things they had to transport over. And just kudos to this group of young men who made it through the course, beat all the college and professional teams and makers that were there to represent the high school community and represent specifically Shoreland Lutheran High School. I think I read their ages. At least two of them are seniors, and then the other two are underclassmen. So some good engineering studies apparently going on there at Shoreland, and we wanted to give them a shout-out in the news and tech section.
Very nice. Great. Kind of reminds me, Sally, of that TED Talk. I forgot what the what it was called, but basically the concept was, you know, those that overthink, or their mind has developed this structured thinking, can't think outside the box and can't be quite as creative as it gets older.
And, right. I think you're remembering the Marshmallow Challenge,
the Marshmallow
and how the kindergartners.
Challenge, right.
You know, designed with the marshmallow in mind, and everybody else kind of wrote the marshmallow off. It needed to go on top, and it would crash all their towers. And
the kindergartners outperformed the CEOs,
Yep, and apparently the high schoolers outperformed the engineers. Hopefully these boys have potential engineering careers ahead of them as well.
Very nice.
I'm really proud of them.
They could work on some concussion protocol.
Yeah.
There you go.
All right, let's move on to our next segment, Wells Now.
And happening in the Wells world, specifically the Wells Tech world, is a little photo challenge we're running this year with Wells Tech. And it's almost October, so it's time to announce what our October challenge is going to be. Those of you that have listened to the podcast recently have heard about our photo challenge, where each month we're challenging you to share photos in particular categories. In October, we're going to be looking for photos that represent Reformation and fall. So two great topics for the month of October. We hope that you'll share your photos. The way that you do that is go over to wellstech.wells.net/photochallenge, and you'll find information and a form to fill out to share your photos. You'll also find some info on some really cool prizes that were given away in conjunction with the photo challenge. Now, it's still September. We've got the rest of today and all of tomorrow left in September. So if you haven't yet submitted school and Bible study pictures, please do get those in. We want to include them in our Flickr album. I don't think I have it open, but I'll open it real quickly. We've got some school and Bible study pictures there in the Flickr album already, but we'd love to grow it some more. And then come October, we'll be looking for those fall and Reformation photos. So be a part of the Wells Tech Photo Challenge.
Very nice. All right, our next little piece of Wells Tech goodness is our Picks of the Week. And we always let our guests go first. And Gail, you qualify. So do you have a pick this week?
All right, I do. I'm going to share my screen again if I can and go to my pick of the week. Okay, can you see me?
Not as easy as it looks, folks. Any second now, I bet we will. No?
Okay, let me do this.
There it goes.
Okay.
Now I see it.
I am showing you a site called vocabulary.com. I'm always looking for places to take vocabulary words from the literature that we read and store them in a way that they can last all year long and that we can use them and actually use them in our writing is always my goal. So, and learn them, continue to learn them and work on them during the year. So I just decided to try this. I don't think there's anything all that new, but it came across my desk and I looked at it and said, I think that might work. So if you have $900 for your school, you can pay for the paid version, which would let you do a lot of testing with results and that kind of thing. So I don't do that. I just use the free version. And what it does, though, is it allows you create a class, you invite your students. I've invited them, but they don't know that yet. We're just getting it going this month. And so what you can do is set up your classes, and then you assign them lists. And the way they get these lists is, okay, here's my After 20 Years by O. Henry. We had a selection of vocabulary words. Not all of them we could have had, but I pared it down. And so in here are the words, and what you do as a teacher is you get your vocabulary words and all in a column, and you copy and paste them into your new list, and they give you the definitions all right there with the words. So it builds the list for you, and then you send a link to your kids, and then they get the list in there. Window for vocabulary.com, and they have different ways. They can do a spelling bee, which is where the word is read to them and they spell it. There are other practice activities here, and there's no test in the free version on here, but I mean you can do your own testing, and my goal isn't always necessarily to test them, but to get them to use the words in some way as we progress through the year. So some we do, and of course some we don't, but this was a good find for me, because now I can make separate lists for all the stories, and we can go in and view them that way. You can also select to see all the words at once when you're reviewing your list. Let me go back to it was right there. Vocabulary list. Okay, my list. Every Friday, they send me a word in my email. I call it the challenge word. It comes from vocabulary.com, and then we start class by looking at what the word is this week, and we add it to, there's only one of them in there so far, but these are the Friday challenge words, and they're challenging. So kids mm-hmm. would be exposed to words that they, you know, probably wouldn't in other ways, but I had a couple kids this year that just really love vocabulary, so it's neat for them. And then we're going to build this challenge list, too, and go back to it. And the kids can practice whenever they want, practice learning it. And then there's this 100 words every middle schooler should know. That's a pre-done list. And I'm not assigning things from it necessarily as an assignment, but it's in here, and every once in a while for our classroom opener, we'll go in and look at it. They can do it on their own. It's a challenge for them. The words from the stories I'll spend more time on and do more with, but I know I have kids that will be interested in this list too. There's a lot of different choices of lists out there. And then there's also classroom competition, and there's whole school competition all over the country, and there's a leaderboard. So I haven't quite figured out if you have to pay to do this. I'm kind of thinking you do, but I haven't really looked into this part of it yet. But some of these classes, and I saw these, there's a video in here of some sixth grade students who are just crazy about vocabulary, and they won the weekly challenge, and then they get a banner. And but, yeah, you get these little awards, too, if I'd show you my class just from fooling around and playing with the words while I made these up. I have all kinds of little awards already. So if the kids, you know, like to have those kinds of things. That was greatly motivating to these kids in the video. So some kids, I think it would be, some kids maybe not so much. But I think it'd be really cool for your school to be competing like this and mastering vocabulary words. So Definitely. Anyway, I'm going to use it in my own way. It's got some other applications that I won't use. But I'm looking forward to make, this will be another tool for a vocabulary going along with literature that I think will work well for me. So that's my pick.
Awesome. Very good. Vocabulary.com. Sally.
My turn, and my pick is actually photography related. I think maybe the Wells Tech Photo Challenge reminded me of a bucket list item that I had to learn more about using that DSLR camera that has been sitting there on auto and
auto.
Not being exercised very fully. You know, it has a dial that you can switch to manual mode and do all kinds of creative things, but not an area I've ventured into before. But I'm getting past that. I'm going to address the bucket list item, and I actually signed up for a photography class, just a basic introduction to your DSLR. And along with that was doing some Pinterest viewing, because that's a cool thing to do, just go browse around on Pinterest. It's always fun. And I came across this complete guide to photography for beginners. It actually goes right along with what I was taught in class this week. And it is that there are three main areas that you need to understand: the aperture, the shutter speed, and the ISO. And we spent our time this week dealing with aperture and what effect that has on your photos. So this is it's a very lengthy infographic, really great information to help you get started. There's that Nikon dial right there, and I made it over to the A. I'm no longer on auto anymore. I'm dealing with the aperture. Anyway, it led me to the Catch Up blog, and apparently Catch Up is a British company that allows you to upload your photos and share them privately and stuff. So that's kind of their business side, but this blog is just loaded up with great tips. And this one in particular, exposure and photography, how to take beautiful photos, introduces a lot of the concepts that are included in their infographic kind of from the perspective of exposure. It's, you know, talking about the big three, the aperture, ISO, and shutter speed stuff. And at the end, you can actually sign up to have a little ebook delivered to you. I think much of what's in the ebook is contained in this infographic as well. So just two great kind of reference things, an infographic for beginners and a really nifty blog. There's lots of cool articles on the Catch-Up blog. Oh, I think I have it opened in another tab. 15 tips on how to take good photos with your iPhone. Just all kinds of creative things, mm-hmm. taking food shots and complete guide to photography for beginners. There's that infographic link. Just all kinds of goodies here on the Catch-Up blog. So if you're into photography or maybe it's been on your bucket list as well, here's a resource to help you get started. And I'll let you know how my classes go. I've got two more to go, and hopefully I'm going to master a little bit more about that camera.
Very nice. Be expecting some good things out of that camera over the course of this challenge.
Yep. Up the ante a little.
Yep, up in the ante. All right. My pick is a kind of a, well, it's a lot of different things. Basically, it's a calendar, and I'm just showing my iPhone here. So it is an iPhone app. There is an iPad app. There is a Android version, and it's not just any calendar. So you're looking at my calendar here, and kind of see that we're doing the Wells Tech recording. It shows the image of the person that you're meeting with, if it is something that some kind of tool that you're using to grab that. One thing I like about this calendar, and first of all, it's free. Second of all, you can aggregate all kinds of different things in it. So you'll notice that on my calendar, I have information from Google Hangouts. So my Google account is attached to this. I also have another Google Calendar that we maintain for all of our shows, but I could bring in also my Outlook calendar. We use Trello on, you know, here in the Synod office. That is a project management tool, so I can bring in Trello information. You can bring in all kinds of stuff from Evernote, and I'll show you that in a minute. You can also bring in all kinds of other calendars from different sources. So you notice that I added a particular television show to my calendar. So whenever that show is on, it will appear on my calendar. You've got the traditional birthdays and other kinds of things that show up on here. Let me show you some of the things that you can add. So when I go under settings, there's an option here called visible calendars. So you see all of the Google calendars that I have access to, family members, church calendar, birthdays, those kinds of things. I can pull up any of my Trello boards. I can kind of see all of the interesting calendars I have added. So my favorite football team, the 49ers, public holidays, the Badgers, etc. But it's very, very easy to add different calendars. So if I go under interesting calendars, so let's say that I wanted to add another television show. So I would pull up interesting calendars, and it will load everything that it is programmed by. By the way, this is a Microsoft product. They purchased it, and interestingly enough, there's not a Microsoft app. So it's just there is a web app, but no Microsoft app. You can kind of see all the sports that you can grab here, moon phases, television. So if I look at the TV section, I'm in the Central Time Zone. I'll open that up. I'll go to, let's go to ABC, and I can see all the shows that are available there. I see one that Sally might be interested
in. Castle's
right there. So as I add that, now it's linked. Now if I go back to my calendar, I should be able to view when Castle is going to be on next. So as I scroll through, let's see, when is Castle on?
It's Monday night.
Monday.
Go to Monday. And it may need to refresh. Oh, there it is.
There it is.
9 o'clock. And when you open that up, it will give you a summary, you know, of the show, the ability to share it. And so it just kind of keeps you up to date. So you can have all kinds of things added there. What I like is kind of the to-do stuff. So you saw that, you know, the to-do list that I maintain is on Trello, so I could actually see a calendar of just that. If I switch what I'm sharing here, let me stop sharing that. I'll share my web browser where you can see a little bit more of what's going on. It looks like any other calendar. So you got the same thing. It's in a tab here. You can add different calendars. You can do the exact same thing you did on the phone. You can edit. You can add. So it's really just kind of a nice calendar that aggregates all those different calendars, because we've all got different calendars that we need to work with, all into one kind of nice view. It's all color-coded. You can edit the items from each of these. So if you wanted to move a meeting, you could do that right here on the calendar. One of the nicest things you can do here is it works with a kind of a centralized meeting management system. So if I wanted to schedule lunch, let's say, with Gail, so I would click my meet button and say, hey, Gail, let's try and meet. I'm going to show her when I'm available. So we could do it Thursday, or we could do it Friday from 12 to 1. So I've clicked those two because I see that those are open on my calendar. I would click the checkbox. I could set the location. So let's say I'm going to, what's a good restaurant there in New London, Gail?
We would have to go to Appleton, at least.
So let's say Applebee's.
Sure.
In New London. Or in Appleton, you said. There's probably not an Applebee's.
Yes, there's an Applebee's there.
So there's one right there. I click that. So she's going to get the time options. She's going to get where we want to meet. I could title it. I'm going to click the checkbox. What that does is it copies it to your clipboard. So you send an email. You attach the link. And when she gets the link, she'll come to a web version where she can actually pick which one works for her, send the message back. It loads it to whatever calendar she wants through kind of iCal technology. Great way to schedule these meetings, the ability to kind of coordinate. It only works with two people, so I can't send this out like, Doodle, where you can send it out to, like, you know, multiple people. This is just kind of a one-on-one scenario. So kind of a neat feature that they baked in. Again, this is called Sunrise Calendar. If you go to calendar.sunrise.am, you'll be able to check it out. That's my pick.
Yep. I've actually used that one.
Have you?
Yep. I always used it before there was a Google Calendar for the iPhone.
Right. Right. And this I like a little bit better because it allows me to kind of bring in all those different kinds of sources and see it in one consolidated view. I can have a personal calendar. I can have my church calendar. I can have the usher schedule, whatever. I can have a work calendar, those kinds of things. Plus all these other cool things you can add in. So it's a neat tool.
Yeah.
Very good.
This would be the normal place, Sally, where we would have community feedback. We're switching things up a little bit. We're going to try something different. We are going to dedicate a show a month to community feedback. Because we get a bunch of it, we're just going to kind of store it up. And then for that show, that's really all we're going to do. Is going to go through that community feedback, talk about some of the things that were shared, some of the questions that were asked, those kinds of things. And our first community feedback show is going to be October 20th, so that's 3 weeks away. So what we'd like you to do is still just submit your feedback like you always do. That's great. That's awesome. We're just going to not necessarily bring it up on the next show unless it's really time sensitive. I think we'll pull those out and make sure that people are aware of that kind of stuff. So. But don't wait to submit your community feedback. Do that like you always do through email, wellstech@wells.net. Go to the show notes page, wellstech.wells.net. Go to our Pinterest board, our Google Plus page, Facebook, Twitter, #WellsTech. We'll see all that stuff. We'll grab it. We'll pack it into that show. And that show will be a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to our first community feedback show where you guys are crafting the agenda for the show. I think we'll still have like picks of the week, that kind of thing, but basically it's going to be a feedback show. So a little bit different. See how it goes.
Awesome. But we're not giving up on ministry resources, and that's
what's
next.
What do we got
on the list? We heard from listener Jason Winjet, and he shared with us something that we think would be great for educators out there, and it's a website called brainscape.com. Now, Jason says he has to give shout out to NBC Morning News because he saw this on the news and thought it would be worth sharing with our educator audience and a great ministry resource. It's basically a new way to do flashcards. So you go there, sign up for a free account, and it has some analytics to it. So as you're responding to flashcards, you rate yourself on how well you knew it from 1 to 5, and then it brings back up the flashcards based on those ratings and your confidence with it, and shows it more frequently or less frequently based on your feedback. So when you create that free account, which I just did, it brings you in and you have all these different free flashcard types, drills, including vocabulary. And it says, for instance, in this history one, who are the Puritans? You can click reveal answer, and it's kind of walking me through how it works as well. And it gives you a definition of who the Puritans were, and then you could say, how well did you know this? Rate yourself, and maybe I got a 2. Very good. That means you didn't know it that well, and it'll show up often, so you can remember it. What was the Great Migration, reveal answer, and there you can read what it was and rate yourself. So that introduction of the analytics to the equation with flashcards makes it kind of your personal experience. So you can kind of drill yourself as needed on things that you find more difficult. And I think Brainscape has a lot of potential. There are pay-for versions as well, but I think that kind of comes into play if you use some of the flashcard sets that are built and, you know, you just want to make use of them. I think you can create your own and not have to use the paid-for ones. So there's links available on the site. If you're a teacher, you might want to dig in a little bit deeper and figure it out. But we definitely wanted to get this one out in front of you as a great ministry resource for those doing any type of education, perhaps catechism cards to history, to vocabulary, to spelling. I guess not spelling, but vocabulary. All kinds of uses for flashcards, so check out Brainscape.
Looks like there's also a mobile version. So
very good. You are very timely. Awesome.
We have a video to share, don't we, Sally?
We do, and it comes from a series, a new series being developed by the Wells Hymnal Project. There's a group of folks who are taking the survey information. A few months ago, we asked you to respond about what your favorite hymns are, and they're taking some of those favorite hymns and producing videos. It's a really neat experience. You get to hear the song. For instance, the one they released this week is In Christ Alone, so it's a beautiful rendition of In Christ Alone, but as you watch the video, it actually displays on the screen, I'm just going to mute it so I don't hear it so strongly in my ear, it displays some of the feedback that people gave during the survey, why they love this song so much. And it's a really uplifting thing to read. One of the people that responded about In Christ Alone, for instance, told about how their daughter had gone through some type of transplant procedure and found great comfort in this hymn, and that she eventually passed away, sadly, but that they knew that she passed away with strong faith in her heart that was, you know, strengthened by listening to this hymn in particular and some of those days in the hospital and things. So just some really special stories and just a neat way to experience the hymn, to get that feedback of why everybody loves it so much. So they've done it with one other hymn so far. I think they promised that their next hymn will be Abide With Me. So we can be watching for that to come out as well. They've established a Vimeo account to post these hymn reviews on, and I think this is a really neat one for us to get exposed to it with. So listen and watch In Christ Alone.
Very nice. All right. Well, that is going to about do it. We will return next week, and we'll have a familiar face joining us. We hope to have an interview with missionary Mike Hartman from Mexico. So stay tuned for that. Some of a little bit of chatter about his exciting work. They've got some very cool things, some technology things that they're leveraging to get the word out about their Savior. So look forward to that, and hope you will return next week. That's going to about do it for our education technology show this month. Gail, it's so good of you to spend an hour with us each time. Thank you so much for doing that.
You're very welcome. I enjoy it.
Good. And don't be a stranger. We'll have you on in a couple months probably. Sally, thanks for all your work and contributions that make this show what it is. And I will see you next week as well. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week. Blessings. Bye-bye.